So this week's episode is probably a record even for the Neuro Clinic. This has been a long time in the pipeline, and I do apologise for the good folk at Decently, who are, by their nature, very patient people. We're joined this week by James Birch of Decently, who are a health tech company driving forward the development of an app called Milo, which is designed for analysis of complex patient interactions following acquired brain injury. We're also joined by Anna Lee, who's an assistant psychologist who's doing a lot of the hard work on the project, and by my colleague, Cleena Carroll.
Welcome to our next episode of the Neuro Clinic. I'm joined by Ingram Wright.
Hello.
And I'm Cleena Carroll. And today we have some guests joining us from the Northwest. We have Anna and we have James. So I will hand over to you, Anna, to introduce yourself first.
Thank you. So my name's Anna and I'm currently working at Salford Royal Hospital in a split post. So I'm partly in the outpatient department as a assistant psychologist in the neuropsychology department. And then the other half is working as a research assistant on the Mellow project that James has produced.
So James, that leads us nicely to you.
Yeah, afternoon everyone. Yeah, James Birch from Decently. We are a health tech startup based in the Northwest in Manchester. And yeah, working very closely with Anna and colleagues in Salford. So really pleased to be here.
Apologies on your behalf, James, to anyone listening in the morning who believes that they've got up rather late when this podcast goes out.
Absolutely.
Several listeners have now spilt their coffee and worried they're late for an appointment. Don't know whether it quite works out that way.
Yeah.
Well, welcome both of you. Thank you for your time dropping in.
Thank you.
I'm going to start by just asking if you can give you've mentioned the Mellow app. Milo?
I wanted to call it Milo, yeah. And I wondered, do you get that, James?
We do get that a little bit. We get, is it Milo? Is it Mellow? What does it stand for? Is it an acronym? Obviously, the NHS is full of acronyms. So no, it isn't an acronym and it's Mellow. But I guess if people want to call it Milo, we don't really.
We're not going to stop them.
Yeah. No, Mellow. We just need to get that into our brain for now for this podcast. Mellow.
Just think, keep it calm.
yeah. And I guess, for many of our listeners, they may not know that this is an app kind of about supporting people with behaviours that challenge. So I guess in that context, it fits quite nicely. Yeah. So Anna, I wonder if you could give us a little bit of an explanation of, you know, why this app, kind of why thinking about kind of challenging behaviours has been an issue for people with brain injuries and their families and their wider context and wider kind of systems.
Yeah, definitely. So before I was in the outpatient neuropsychology department, I was on the inpatient neuro rehab wards in the same sort of assistant psych role. And on those wards, it was kind of people at the early stages in their recovery, who have had traumatic brain injury or acquired brain injuries. And with those natures of injury can come sort of lots of complex behaviours and behavioural needs and patterns that I'm sure you guys are aware of, that can kind of impact the patient's experience of being in hospital and patients around them and the staff and things like that. So we'd done a little bit of research in the team last year and found out that challenging to manage behaviours were making up around like 7 to 13% of the referrals to our neuropsychology department. But having said that, that might not actually include the breadth of the scope, because often we'll have people who are sort of referred for something else, for example, like not engaging in therapy, when actually the nature of that might be one of those challenging to manage behaviours. So very prevalent on the wards with the nature of the injuries, and some of the main kind of presentations of those behaviours that we see can be things like, because people are quite early on in their medical needs, so it can be things like pulling at their tubes or disorientation, so kind of not sticking to their care plan by trying to wander on their own when maybe they might need support and assistance to mobilise, or sexualized behaviours, or physical aggression, verbal aggression. So the kind of impact that we'd see on the patients themselves can be reduced engagement in therapy and therefore impacting their sort of rehabilitation prospects or increased length of stay in hospital. And then for the families seeing that on the wards, the sort of increased carer stress, and then for the staff, sort of the obviously the physical violence and the staff burnout of sort of engaging with these behaviours.
And am I right in thinking about, I know we'll come on to talking about the app and the development, am I right in thinking that this app was very much kind of driven out of that inpatient setting rather than kind of challenging behaviours that people might have whilst they're kind of like in the community?
Yeah, so I think James can probably touch on that one a little bit more, but at this stage, the sort of evaluation that we're at is focusing on that inpatient environment, but it's not to say that Mello could kind of develop into something that can be taken through to community and different sort of environments.
Yeah, and I guess it's just, well, my background is community neuro rehab, like kind of, so you know, I'm, you know, that's where my brain goes to, like kind of in a way. But I know there is quite a lot of work actually at the moment, isn't there, Ingram, like kind of about trying to organize kind of guidance kind of more generally, like kind of around supporting staff, systems, carers, kind of family members with supporting people who have challenging behavior on inpatient units, particularly kind of within rehab settings. So that, you know, that work is ongoing and I'm sure will link really nicely with the stuff that you're doing. Oh,
I suppose we're sort of itching to hear more about Mello, aren't we, and the development of it and how it fills a gap. But I suppose before getting into that, Anna, just really wanted to understand what the information needs are around understanding.
Yeah, so that was
challenges.
Yeah, sorry, that was something that we kind of learned a little bit more about when we did a poster for the BERT conference earlier on in the year, and we'd kind of seen where that need was in terms of the referral numbers, and then we looked at actually how much information is recorded to understand the behaviours so far. And I think there was something like, I can't remember now, but it was zero sort of agitated behaviour scales, which is the one that is a go-to in our kind of setting, and then very few, like 10 to 20 ABC charts over a 6 month period for those referrals. So it's that information kind of isn't being captured in the way that it needs to be. And there's lots of kind of reasons for that in terms of them being paper-based and time-consuming.
I guess, you know, for our listeners who may not be aware, an ABC chart is looking at the antecedents to behaviour, the behaviour and the consequences of the behaviour.
Yeah.
And, you know, in inpatient settings, that involves kind of a lot of more documentation when people have quite a lot of documentation and there's a resource limitation, isn't it? So often we'll see those ABC charts being, you know, quite empty or not having a lot of information in there.
Yeah.
I suppose the question for you, James, I don't know if you sign up to this, but people often said to me when people have ideas about apps that if you can make it work on paper first and you can add some value by translating something into an app, you know, you're probably along the right lines. But in this case, it's the burden of filling in the paper that seems to be the problem. Am I right, Anna?
Yeah, definitely. It's kind of the process, which we'll get into a little bit later, I'm sure, but it's highlighted the wider sort of like systemic issues in terms of recording information and understanding behaviours, because it is related to resource and staffing and things like that, like that. When if filled out, these paper resources can give really good sort of useful information, but it's, as you said, those barriers to actually getting that recorded.
And I think it's that sharing of psychological concepts, isn't it, in a way, as well, like kind of, you know, a lot of the time when we talk about behaviors that challenge, we talk about using consistent approaches, we talk about kind of like a whole system approach or kind of cross system, so that, you know, everybody is kind of supporting in the same way as much as possible. And that can be the challenge in a way, isn't it, of how do we impart those psychological kind of principles to lots of different people in a really complex system. And you know, I wonder if you could speak a little bit to how you maybe thought about that in terms of the early stages of this kind of app development.
From my point of view, yeah, well, certainly. I mean, I think our approach at Decently is to spend a lot of time listening and understanding the current status quo, this current way of working. So, we've been running 2 years, but probably it's not, I'd say the first year to at least maybe even 18 months, the technology element was not the priority. The priority was really spending a lot of time, largely Northwest trusts and mainly NHS, although definitely more recently getting input across private organisations and charities that are delivering care. But to really understand what are the current ways of working, and to your point, Ingram, around the quality of the paper-based sort of resources. There's many years of research that's gone into those things like the ABS, and then the concept of the ABC, which we want to be able to harness. But the process of capturing the data, the time related to that, paper-based, and that all of the challenges with that, and then actually getting to a point where you can easily begin to make some understanding of that data. It is the main bit that we wanted to look at to begin with in terms of how Mellow could help.
So I guess the question that we're sort of skirting around is what is Mellow for? What does it address? What does it deal with? I mean, I suppose we understand there's a problem, Anna. Where does Mellow fit in, James?
Yeah, sure. To begin with, we're being very careful to not sort of run before we can walk. But as Anna said, our starting point is around kind of inpatient care, and it's specifically a clinical facing app. So at the moment, there isn't an interface that's accessed by patients or family, although that may well come, and probably points to the community related sort of points that you were making clearer. But right now, it's a clinical facing app that would be is being used in Salford. To really bring together the current frameworks, which is the ABS, the Agitated Behaviour Scale, in a sort of a proactive baselining assessment across the patients that come into the ward there. And then as and when incidents may well occur, then that's where they use the ABC, which we've translated into Mellow to bring a far more consistent and standardized approach, I guess, to capturing incident information, to really help bring together far more informed and evidence-based decision-making, sort of care decisions around that particular patient and staffing levels, and I guess the day-to-day challenges that the wards experience.
I wondered, James. It's heartening to hear that. I mean, I guess one of the challenges that you would face is that there's an enthusiasm for an app being a solution and being there in the pipeline and immediately available. But I guess what you're saying is part of your role is to take time to take stock of what exactly is going on with the existing practice before you dive in with your coding, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think we when you look at stakeholders sort of, and building relationships with ward staff, MDT staff, ranging from healthcare assistants through to Anna's roles and then senior management. You've got compliance, you've got an understanding level of skepticism around, I think, digital solutions that claim to solve everyone's problems and make things easier and quicker and all the rest of that. So I think rushing in on day one saying here's an app we've built is just not the right way of doing it. So the technology bit is in some ways the easier bit, although there are obviously complexities to that, and right now the first sort of product that it, or the first version that's being used is around capturing and bringing together intelligence in a far more useful way. And we can talk a bit more about longer term plans later on.
I'm just interested in when you had that opportunity to gather information, have conversations about existing clinical practice. What was your perception of the problems with the conventional approach?
Well, I think, well, to begin with, in our discussions across different trusts, I think there were multiple different ways of doing this, even within, I think, and I would say this, even within the same hospital. So across a couple of their hyperacute wards, the approach to filling out the ABC forms was different. And I think then we were talking to other hospitals across the Northwest. And so I think there was a real inconsistency in terms of how things happen. Yeah, and understandably, you know, I think people are very busy and they do what they need to do because of time pressures. But you know, the paper-based approach to reporting is an obvious challenge, I think, in terms of particularly the support workers that may be being told to complete particular forms, but maybe never ever seeing the full circle of I've captured this data, what does it then actually mean and what's the impact? Because I think, you know, our discussions with Anna and her colleagues was that often on an ABS example, it could maybe even be weeks before that data makes it into a spreadsheet that is then analyzed, that's then going into some sort of manual sort of graphical output that can actually then be looked at, and often that doesn't get fed back to all members of staff. So yeah, a real communication kind of challenge as well.
Yes, and I have a quick question. It may or may not be a quick question. I'm sure there may be lots of discussion around it, but in terms of the trust that you work in, are there electronic notes? Is it a paper-based note system?
Yeah, so it's electronic notes, but lots of stuff is still paper-based. And that's kind of another thing, is that some sort of like disciplines of staff won't have access to those, to some sort of support work, or often it's lots of bank staff and things like that. So they might not have access to those notes. So it's kind of everyone's still got that folder with all the paper in at the end of their bed. But yeah, there are the electronic record systems.
And I guess the reason I ask that is because, you know, thinking about rolling out apps and technology within the NHS, you know, for many of us that work in the NHS and do battle with, you know, IT systems on a daily basis, you know, I think any of us would, you know, we'd give our left arm some days, wouldn't we, to kind of have a more accessible approach to be able to do something that will aid communication. And, you know, there's a much wider systemic factor here at play, isn't it, about patient safety and communication to aid with, you know, safety, avoiding safeguarding concerns because of, you know, inconsistency in communication or lack of communication or lack of looking at that data. So, you know, I think there's that almost like a discrepancy at times, isn't there, between what we as clinicians can see is like, wow, yes, give us this, we really want it, and the kind of multiple barriers of kind of, you know, management, IT, governance that kind of goes on in the background in complex healthcare systems. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how you've manage some of those barriers, kind of with I'm calling them barriers, opportunities and barriers,
yeah,
locally in Salford.
Yeah, I think as well, just something that you said there made me think of something that James said about the making it sort of seem worthwhile. So for us in the neuropsychology team, like, we want something completely different out of the information that maybe a nurse would want or management would want and stuff like that. And it's that analysis part that I think is where that digital aspect is most needed, because if we are recording that information, then it takes however long to sort of, as James said, like get that up onto the electronic records, and then in turn manually sort of creating a behavioral support plan for each individual patient. So that's the part that maybe when we're telling people at the moment, so staff on the ward, to sort of fill out this paperwork hourly and provide this information, it obviously will feel as though we're kind of increasing that workload and they might not see an output for it. So I think that kind of is where that comes in as well. But in terms of the barriers, I think the main thing is just being extremely flexible. So I think, as James sort of touched on, there is a lot of skepticism around digital health in the NHS, and rightly so. And also some people sort of have been in this profession for years and years and years, so there's a lot of sort of trust in how things work already. So just always coming from the approach of openness and kind of reassuring that we're interested in sort of like being on their side and hearing what they have to say, and kind of like them influencing our approach rather than, like James said, kind of imposing our ideas onto other people.
Something really important in that, Anna, no doubt is a challenge that you would recognise, James, that many practitioners in the NHS have had conversations about how this app or this electronic digital solution will change your life. And it turns out that it doesn't, and it makes your life more difficult, and it will only accept 4,000 characters and no more, or whatever it is. And it becomes that cynicism, as you put it, Anna, grows around digital solutions generally. So I suppose James, this is sort of alluding to perhaps a broader aspect of how you manage that interface with healthcare, but presumably you recognize that kind of a degree of cynicism about whether an app is going to change your life.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I think any, even broadly, any workforce where your day-to-day function isn't sat at a screen. So whether it be in health, obviously here, or whether it be teachers in a classroom or whatever, you know, I think there is always a barrier to kind of see how you can bring in a digital solution to a largely non-digital world. However, the benefits, we all know the benefits if you get it right. And I think, unfortunately, across the NHS particularly, there's been probably a myriad of pilots where they probably started off with good intentions, but it hasn't worked out. So, yeah, I think on our side, it's the challenge of ensuring we understand the problem and the current ways of working and the parameters of how you come to address that. Having an appropriate time scale to kind of go, we're not going to change everything on day one. But also, you know, what is on us is to ensure we've got a really great team back at base that can understand how you build an intuitive interface, whether it's being used on a phone, a tablet, or a laptop, that will genuinely bring about those benefits.
And I've heard a saying years ago, actually, of like the fuzzy front end, of kind of, you know, that need to kind of be able to, I think you use the word flexibility, Anna, isn't it? Like kind of have that flexibility at the front end of development, like kind of where it is a bit fuzzy, it's a bit unknown, yeah. and really spending that time of kind of putting that time in kind of in those early stages, which it sounds like you've really, you know, tried to do indecently.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what we've been doing with Anna. I mean, Anna's hopefully very patient. We kind of firing off loads of questions at her and kind of getting loads of feedback, but it's been a very regular, certainly weekly, if not sometimes daily, back and forth of kind of, how is this working? Is that right? Because when you are translating practices from paper to digital, and also I think the other important bit is that there are practices on a day-to-day basis in the ward that aren't even captured anywhere, that they exist through communication and just through verbal, yeah, and through the minds of just the understanding that particularly clinical psychologists have. So our ability to say, how do we bring that into an interface that can be used? The back and forth with Anna and the team and the constant changing and adapting has been vital.
And I guess I'm just sitting here thinking about the mirroring in a way, isn't it, between behaviours that challenge, you know, a lot of what we talk about with people who have behaviours that challenge is that people are trying to communicate something. Mm-hmm. And it might be that it's not explicit what that is, and it's a bit more implicit, and kind of, you know, people who know them well might know that better, kind of what that behaviour might mean or not. You know, there's a real mirroring, isn't there, between the systems around developing kind of supports around this and what's actually going on in that, you know, more micro system for the patient, their family, and the people around them.
I think as well, that's where it's going to be really great to get like a PPI kind of involvement in it at some point. It's outside the scope of this evaluation timeline, but getting the families of patients and patients themselves sort of involved in the development and potentially like the prospects of where it could go after. Yeah, I think that makes me think of how important that will be.
It struck me that in terms of PPI and who you'd have involved, it was interesting, James, you said, and Anna referred to it earlier on, that lots of paper would end up being accumulated but never fed back into the system. So my experience in using ABC charts has been exactly that, that with the best of intentions, we took some nicely printed charts down to the ward. 6 weeks later, we went down, there was a huge stack of these. And then we spent a further 6 weeks creating an Excel spreadsheet with all the data. And so it's 3 months down the line between someone putting pen to paper and actually hearing something of the value that they've brought to an understanding of a particular behavior. And that strikes me as far too long, really, in terms of if I was training my newly acquired puppy in that way, and, you know, 6 weeks after doing a good thing, he was to receive a dog treat, I don't think he'd be particularly impressed. And I suspect that so some of the users that you're catering to are those people at the front end on the front line, Anna, aren't they, who were diligently filling in these forms but not seeing any benefit of filling in the forms because it just takes too long to process them.
Yeah, massively.
Sorry, both of you have referred to a PPI. What do you mean by PPI?
Just the public and patient involvement. So getting basically what it says, getting families and patients kind of involved in the process and the research aspect of validating Mello and
There's one of those NHS acronyms, yeah. James, you were referring to earlier.
Lena, one of your roles here as co-host is to boss the acronyms, right? So
that's what I'm here for, Ingram.
That's why we brought you on board.
Yeah.
James, any thoughts about who the intended beneficiaries are of the app? Is it? I mean, I suppose ultimately probably is the patients themselves, but is it more focused on that interface between, you know, frontline observers of behaviour and the psychologists who are perhaps sitting one step removed? I don't know, Anna, how you're set up, but in some settings, the ABC charts will be filled in by nursing staff on a ward, right? And to my mind, James, they might be the intended beneficiaries of this.
Yeah, I guess specifically to begin with, you know, we've identified the sort of the users of Mello that fall into the people that would maybe more likely spend time capturing the data in a more efficient way. So most likely ward staff, and then the people and the members of staff that would more perhaps look at the analysis and sort of the outputs of the data. So I think that broad MDT kind of span of different users accessing Mello in different ways, and that it can feed into MDT meetings, shift handover meetings, into the different sort of reports that might be a discharge report or a sort of an update for family in the first instance, certainly.
And I guess we sort of alluded to the advantages of capturing data in electronic form. You know, it sort of gets around scruffy handwriting and people writing really small to get lots of information in, other people writing in huge script. And it sort of constrains the form of data entry in a way that you can be more convinced of the reliability and consistency of that data capture. Yeah. Also the data handling aspects, you can much more readily translate the data from an app on a phone or whatever into an Excel spreadsheet and start delivering some value. Yeah. Are there any other kind of aspects to the Mello app in terms of its particular advantages that...
I think to begin with, we've kind of wanted to have the scope for the work that we're doing with Salford on the pilot, you know, pretty focused. So it's also, you know, I guess worth saying it's standalone, so we haven't looked within the current pilot integration, although that would be an area that we of course want to explore. We don't want Mello to be standalone forever. We want it to be able to integrate effectively, but the way that we capture the data at the moment is through hopefully a and Anna can testify, a more useful and easy to use kind of user interface, to whether it's the ABS, those questions relate to the agitated behavior scale, or whether it's the ABC element. But I mean, you know, our longer term pathway now, and particularly with technology and how it's advancing in terms of how you could capture data, you know, we're doing proof of concepts and prototyping around voice to text. As a way that could be even just taking this conversation, if we were talking about a patient incident, we've modelled ways of bringing that into an ABC form from just being a verbal conversation, and you know, the potentials of AI being used in an appropriate way is really exciting in terms of the data that's captured. So yeah, I think our long term approach for how Mello could really evolve is really exciting. But like I say, we're wanting to make sure we don't rush too far ahead of ourselves.
Well, in terms of rushing, James, I confessed before we started the recording that, I mean, I've always felt personally like I'm enthusiastic for digital solutions that do some of the heavy lifting for us. And there seems tremendous application. And I think that's what excites us often, is that we can see the problems in front of us. We don't necessarily have the technical expertise to deliver the solutions, but we're enthusiastic about the solutions that are potentially there in the pipeline. But I mean, you're urging a little bit of caution about, I suppose, being overzealous. And I'm guilty of this, because everything, since we've had MS Teams in the NHS, I've been automating every process I can possibly imagine, much to the frustration of everybody around me who said, you know, that wasn't a process that needed automating. But I've automated it nonetheless.
I think it's that. Yeah, sorry. I think it's that of we know we can, but is it like you should? Yeah, and that's nowhere more prevalent than across patient care, is it? So I think that's where we can play around with and come up with some prototyping, and then find the appropriate way of bringing that in that fits in line with NHS digital kind of standards and approaches to solutions like this.
I'm minded of psychological theory of stages of change, and that kind of, you know, how do we shift from pre-contemplative to contemplative to action? And, you know, it's difficult, isn't it? Like, you know, I'll wholeheartedly sit here and say I saw a reference for myself from years ago that said Cleena is resistant to change in use and technology. But, you know, over the years, I have actually embraced it and been quite surprised at myself, because there are times when I feel like, you know, the granny in the IT class that's just like, oh, just do it for me, I don't want to, like, kind of learn something new. But actually, once there's that, again, it's back to that word you used earlier, Anna, isn't it? That flexibility to be able to kind of go, oh, do you know, maybe it might be okay.
Yeah, I think that patience as well, because there's always, what these guys have realized with the process of trying to get sort of like agreement from information governments, like, it's not gone at the stages as we'd anticipated in terms of how many users we have at each stage, or the anonymity of the data and things like that we're using. But there's always delays, and I think it's just that openness to that.
And I suppose, James, I mean, it's an interesting point you make, Anna. And I suppose I wondered, my assumption is that this has been a formative, positive experience for you. It's a rather distinctive role for an assistant psychologist, isn't it, to get involved in app development?
Yeah, massively. I think as well, the main thing for me has been the understanding of and sort of like the balancing of different stakeholders. So kind of being at that like funnel in between the two ends of speaking with sort of nurses and people on the ward, the sort of behavioral analysis part of it, and then also the feedback to you guys at Decently, and then thinking about the investment aspect of it. These are all things that I've never had to sort of consider before. It's always just been that patient focus, whereas now it's looking at sort of like the broader scheme of it. So yeah, it really has been a good process to be involved with.
That's good to hear. I was going to ask James about whether he would say never again, or what, Amy, because often from a developer's point of view, what we hear is that the NHS is tricky, or clinicians are tricky to work with. I presume you aren't saying never again, James.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, I think with
to be honest,
it'd be a bad thing to say, wouldn't it? But no, honestly, I think with Salford, part of Northern Care Alliance, you know, there was an innovation improvement award that we applied for, a bit of a sort of dragon's den kind of process we went through probably this time last year, that allowed there some funding towards a pilot like this. So that was fab, because not every trust does that and actually put some money and some resource behind it, and that allowed, you know, obviously Anna to be involved in it. So yeah, there's been some frustrations. I think that things never go quite according to plan all the time, like that you have in mind, but yeah, it's been brilliant, and we're looking to do more pilots into the next year with other trusts and other organizations to extend where we've kind of got to so far.
Good to hear.
And James, for any of our listeners who are interested in kind of getting in contact, what this is like something that's a bit risky, like kind of when they do it on the radio, isn't it? Like kind of getting the website wrong, but and the email addresses, where can people kind of make contact if they are interested in hearing more about your work?
Yeah, absolutely. We're all the W's, www.decently.co.uk, and there's a contact form on there. Or if you did a /, and then Melo, M-E-L-O, then there's a product page about that. There is a product site coming soon, but not live yet. But yeah, contact us through that. And we'd love to hear people that want to find out more, maybe being part of a pilot, not necessarily just in inpatients, but we're looking across the whole patient pathway.
James, it's really, I imagine you'll be swamped. Hopefully we won't break your website, but but I'm someone who skips contemplation and goes straight for action. So I'll be emailing you this afternoon, James.
That's it.
Thank you very much to you both.
Thank you.
Oh, thanks for your time. It's been great to meet you both.
Thank you.
So as you might have guessed, it's actually been some time since I spoke to James, and we thought it would be perfectly reasonable to give him an opportunity just to update us on what Decently has been up to.
So James, it's a long time since we spoke. We think, having compared notes, that it's back in, what, December 2023?
And yeah, I think so.
I owe you an apology for being rather slow to get this podcast out. But you were going to kindly update us as to what Decently have been doing in the meantime.
Yeah, no, that's great. Thanks, Ingram. Yeah, I think since we last spoke, and probably where the last chat kind of left off, we were obviously spending a lot of time talking with Anna, who was leading on the project at Salford. So yeah, she was super busy with Dr. Teager, probably for throughout the spring of 24, bringing together the evaluation at Salford Royal, which is fab, and that's come out really well. Some really great results coming out of the back of that evaluation, which we'll probably post kind of links to off the back of this. And yeah, really since then, we've been moving the product forward. For the techies out there, we've moved to a new tech stack, which is far more kind of, I guess, robust and ready for scaling.
What on earth is a tech stack, James? Sorry, but you...
The sort of, I guess, the technology platform that Melo is built on. So the sort of the first version we wanted to get out there and sort of, I suppose, prove if it was going to be useful or not. So when you do that, you don't want to spend too much time on the sort of the behind the scenes to do with the tech that you're using. You know, it's a web-based platform, but we've rebuilt that over the last few months. So that's now far more robust, scalable, performs better, is more secure, you know, all of those things that you need for digital health. And then we've gone through the DTAC, which is another one of those acronyms
you're going to have to explain that one as well, I'm afraid.
That's the NHS's standard around kind of patient safety, cybersecurity, GDPR, and the rest of it. So it's the digital kind
of information governance side of
things. Yeah, information governance. It's the digital technology assessment criteria. So we've gone through that twice with a couple of trusts as well, which is again proving that Melo is kind of built in the right way, and we're kind of developing it in the kind of correct kind of approach for compliance and governance standards. So yeah, that's been exciting, as well as then getting new customers on board. So we've just gone live with a new large private healthcare group, and yeah, I think it's been really a really busy probably 6 or 9 months since we last spoke.
So you've done us a double favor, James. You've helped us out with some acronyms and some technical terms that we didn't previously understand, or at least most of us didn't, and given us a very helpful update on what Decently and Melo have been doing. I should add that you kindly extended a sort of demo version of Melo so that I could have a little bit of a play around, which of course I hadn't done last time. And it struck me it's really nicely designed and easy to use. So I kind of like the fact that I could dive in and just get on with it without needing a 50-page manual telling me which.
Well, that's great to know. I think we're so conscious that for the users of Melo, it absolutely needs to be very, very simple and straightforward. Obviously, the context and the information and the job that you're doing isn't always straightforward at all, but I think technology has to help and be an enabler rather than a blocker. So hopefully that's good signs. Thank you for that feedback.
Thank you, James.
Brilliant. Cheers, Ingram.